Good evening. It's May Day with millions worldwide out of work and strikes breaking out across America. Delegates say New York can't stop the primary and schools are closed all day and subways closed all night. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with some of the news for Friday, May 1st, 2020. Former Vice President Joe Biden emphatically denied an accusation of sexual assault leveled by a former staffer in his Senate office on Friday. His denial breaking more than a month of silence on the allegation. Biden spoke with Morning Joe host Mika Brzezinski of the accusations made by the former staffer, Tara Reid.
She says in 1993, Mr. Vice President, that you pinned her against the wall and reached under her clothing and penetrated her with your fingers. Would you please go on the record with the American people? Did you sexually assault Tara Reid?
No, it is not true. I'm saying unequivocally, it never happened. And it didn't. It never happened.
Do you remember her? Do you remember any types of complaints that she might have made?
I don't remember any type of complaint she may have made. It was 27 years ago. And I don't remember, nor does anyone else that I'm aware of. And the fact is that I don't remember. I don't remember any complaint ever having been made.
While Reid was one of several women to come forward in the spring of 2019 with stories of inappropriate touching by Biden, she first detailed her allegations of assault on a podcast with journalist Katie Halper of WBAI fame in late March. And former presidential candidate Andrew Yang filed a lawsuit in federal court today. The suit added all the members of the State Board of Elections and included more plaintiffs after a first try earlier in the week. Lawyers for the state had claimed Yang had no jurisdiction in New York. On Monday, New York State took the unprecedented action of canceling its presidential primary scheduled for June. The primary had already been delayed from its April date because of the coronavirus outbreak. That decision means no other candidate will have the chance to appear on the ballot in the state, and Joe Biden, the presumptive Democratic nominee, will receive all of the 274 pledged delegates. Andrew Yang's attorney is Jeff Curzon.
Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, got changed. It was changed from April 28th to June 23rd. And June 23rd just so happens that's the date when congressional primaries are happening and state Senate primaries are happening and state assembly and other local races are happening in about 42 out of the 62 counties throughout New York State. We filed a lawsuit on Tuesday of this week because what the New York State Board of Elections did with regard to canceling the presidential primary and removing all candidates, Andrew Yang, Bernie Sanders, and others who had met the ballot access requirements under the New York election law, leaving only the quote-unquote presumptive nominee, Joe Biden.
Why is it this is not going to cancel the primary? It just cancels certain participants in the primary.
Your guess is as good as mine. Their decision was made Monday. The candidates weren't given notice, and they were also not provided the opportunity to be heard, which is a basic due process right under the 14th Amendment, and First Amendment right to speech is also implicated. The resolution passed by the New York State Board of Elections was done by Douglas Kellner and Andrew Spano, both Democratic commissioners. There's a third commissioner who's a Republican, and then there's a vacant seat. So they kind of just did this and announced it, and nobody had the opportunity to really participate or even challenge it. On Monday, when they made it, we basically worked 24 hours straight to file our lawsuit on Tuesday. And then the commissioner, Doug Kellner, quickly responded by saying, oh, this court doesn't have jurisdiction. I'm a big fan of common sense, and I think that when the state violates federally guaranteed constitutional rights, they deserve to be sued in federal court. Today, we added five additional defendants just to be sure that there's no subject matter jurisdiction problem under the 11th Amendment. It costs plaintiffs another $400 filing fee.
Today, I was listening to New York City Mayor de Blasio, and he said he was Bernie Sanders supporters, but he had to support this action, that it was unsafe to have this these people's names on the ballot.
I don't understand why it's safe enough for him to go to the gym, but not safe enough for citizens to vote, I don't think there's anything more important than voting. I'm physically in New Hampshire right now, and the motto here is live free or die. Voting is part of our free society, and what the New York State Board of Elections has done effectively through the dead of night, because they did it pursuant to a law that Cuomo signed on April 3rd, which amended the election law, and it was done as part of a appropriations bill, so kind of just snuck in with all the other pork. And that new provision of the election law said that they could do this, supposedly. We're challenging that, of course, and its constitutionality.
Yang is not the only campaign representative to protest the Board of Elections decision. On Monday, Bernie Sanders' campaign called it an outrage, a blow to American democracy, and must be overturned by the Democratic National Committee. And in New York, school's out for summer and maybe longer. Governor Cuomo ordered all schools in New York to remain closed for the rest of the academic year and warned that conventional education may not even be back for the fall.
We're going to have the schools remain closed for the rest of the year. We're going to continue the distance learning programs. Schools have asked about summer school and whether we'll have attendance in schools for summer school. That decision will be made by the end of this month. Again, nobody can predict what the situation is going to be 3-4 weeks from now. So we're trying to stage decisions at intervals that give us the information, but also enough time for people to make the preparations they need to make. So any decisions on summer schools will be made by the end of this month. But in the meantime, meal programs will continue. The child care services for essential workers will continue. And then we want schools to start now developing a plan to reopen. And the plan has to have protocols in place that incorporate everything that we are now doing in society and everything that we learn. We're going to be asking businesses to come up with plans that safeguard workers. When they reopen, we need schools to come up with plans also. That's also for colleges, and the state will approve those plans.
Schools have been shut since the coronavirus pandemic struck New York with deadly force in mid-March. And New York State United Teachers praised the order, saying the safety of students and teachers should be paramount. Cuomo's order impacts 4.2 million K-12 college and university students in the state. Mayor Bill de Blasio said today 202 people died Thursday and the number of hospital admissions increased slightly. The city saw 2,637 new confirmed cases in the five boroughs also as of Thursday. And numbers of the dead keep increasing as officials look more closely at fatalities, chalked up at first to other causes than coronavirus. Isabella Center, a nursing home in Washington Heights, owned by the nonprofit health system MJHS, reported 13 deaths from COVID-19 to the state. In reality, a New York One investigation found at least 98 residents have died there since the start of the pandemic. And MTA Chairman Pat Foy announced that 98 transit workers have died from coronavirus as of Friday, but the numbers seem to be going down, he added. And after a blistering series of photo spreads of homeless people living on city subways, the governor responded yesterday by ordering the subway shut down between 1 and 5 in the morning, starting next Wednesday.
To disinfect all trains and buses every night. It can best be done by stopping train service from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every night during the pandemic, so they can actually perform this service. Now, remember the context that we're in this pandemic. Ridership is down 92%. 1 to 5 are the slow hours, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. It's the lowest ridership. Estimate is about 10,000 people ride the system overall during that period of time. So the MTA will launch what they call the Essential Connector Program. They'll have buses, dollar vans, and if necessary, will provide 4 hire vehicles to transport a person, the Uber, the Lyft, the vehicles, at no cost to the essential worker during those hours to provide transport. So people who need transportation during 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. can have it, will have it, even to the extent of a for-hire vehicle paid for by the MTA.
Homeless advocates say the governor's order was really targeting homeless riders, but Nick Cifuentes is the executive director of the Tri-State Transportation Campaign. He says New York is a 24-hour town, but a temporary closing may be unavoidable.
It sounds like it's something that's a necessary evil at this point in time. We do have to get our hands around coronavirus and figure out how to make sure subways are safe for everybody who uses them. So, you know, this is something that makes sense for now. The important thing is having some metrics in place so that we know when this is going to end. Because certainly, you know, I don't think any New Yorker has signed up for no longer having a 24-hour subway system once we are out of the most urgent phase of this crisis. And then the other thing that's super important here and that the MTA did announce, which is good, is making sure that there's alternative transportation for everybody who needs it during that shutdown time. That could be buses, it could be Uber and Lyft and dollar vans. Any of these solutions are possible. They just need to be there because, you know, there are a lot of essential workers who rely on the subway being functional 24/7.
He did leave it, Governor Cuomo did leave it a bit open-ended, didn't he?
I understand that everything right now feels like it's in flux. That's just the reality of the world we're in right now. So asking for a date certain isn't really a logical thing, but we can ask for some pretty clear criteria for when the subways will go back to 24-hour service. And we don't have that yet, and that's something that we do need to see.
Some have been calling for this for a long time, that it was not realistic to have a subway open all night, that nobody else does it, and they could do so much work if they only were able to close it at night. Do you think this is a new normal that we're going to see more of?
We're not called the city that never sleeps for nothing. There's something fundamental and I think very much ingrained in the core of who we are as New Yorkers that we have a subway that's, you know, around-the-clock system. We pride ourselves on that. And in fact, we put up with a subway that maybe isn't as functional as it could be if it did shut down. But part of the bargain in New York is you've got a 24-hour system that supports people who work overnight, our nightlife, you know, our culture. I think that that's actually really important to the city.
And that's Nick Cifuentes. He's the executive director of the Tri-State Transportation Campaign. Cuomo's order is the first time in the subway's 115-year history that the entire system will lose 24-hour service outside of major events like transit strikes, blackouts, and natural disasters. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In New York and nationwide, thousands of tenants marked the first of the month with a historic rent strike, considered the largest coordinated refusal to pay rent in a century. A recent survey indicates nearly 44% of New York City residents may not have the money to pay rent on time this month. A total of 1.6 million New York residents have reported losing their jobs since the start of the pandemic. Governor Cuomo has been brushing off calls for an executive order to forgive rents, claiming other states that have made that move were not as deficit bound as New York. Evictions have been blocked until at least the end of June. One of the organizers of the rent strike is Susanna Blankley. She says the coronavirus pandemic has made the seeming impossible become possible.
We need to think in the realm of not just what's possible, but what's needed. And the governor has the executive power under the emergency order to cancel the rent. Of course, we need to cancel the rent. There's legislation in Congress. Millions of people cannot pay their rent. They're dealing with the loss of life. They're dealing with the loss of their jobs and their livelihoods. And it's time for the government to step in.
Is there any negotiations going on?
This is 100% of people's movement. I mean, we had a movement to get an eviction moratorium, which we won. The governor has said that that's what he's done for tenants, but that's not enough. That is critical in this moment, but it doesn't help us once the moratorium is lifted. And so we're hoping that this movement of thousands and thousands of people that are organized, that are going on rent strike, over 50 buildings across New York State are on rent strike today, the largest coordinated rent strike we've seen in close to 100 years. We're letting Cuomo know and the legislature know that we're organized. And we're not going to accept policies of the past that bail out landlords. We need a people's bailout.
Mm-hmm. What does this look like? Is there any specific plan that you're looking at?
Essentially, the governor, under his emergency powers, can issue an executive order, which would say that landlords, for a period of time, at least 4 months, you know, starting, I believe, April 1st, wouldn't be able to sue people for the money owed or accumulated during the length of the crisis. So what it means is it would take away landlords' ability to sue. We understand that small landlords are in a different position. Our demand includes a landlord relief fund, as well as mortgage suspension for landlords. But there are also landlords that have acquired millions and millions and millions of dollars in assets, like Zara and BRG Realty, Emerald Equities, Alma, where people are striking. So we shouldn't treat all landlords the same. Those landlords can afford to take a hit. They should take a hit. Their wealth has been facilitated by government policy over generations, and it's time to redistribute that. And it's time for there to be a reckoning of who the government policies benefit.
Has the rent strike been successful?
Rent strikes throughout the history have been powerful and amazingly successful. I mean, think about all of the things that we have in New York as New Yorkers, as tenants, our right to live in a safe and habitable environment comes from the militant movement to organize, our right to have regulated rent. We have no doubt that rent strikes will be successful. Don't pay alone. Don't live in isolation and fear and shame of not being able to pay rent.
What's the difference between not being able to pay your rent and being on rent strike?
Like many folks who can't pay rent, what we're saying is don't do that alone. So there's lots of ways that you can take action to resist the fact that we're in this situation. You can organize with your neighbors. You can make a collective demand. So a rent strike means that your reality is tied to the reality of your neighbors until everybody gets the relief they need.
Is this something that people should do with other people in their own building, or are we talking about a citywide organization?
We're doing both, right? So we're saying that if you're in a building, try to organize your building first. Try to talk to your neighbors. In the time of COVID, we understand you can't door knock anymore, but there are a lot of other ways to reach your neighbors and to organize. If you live in a multifamily building, you have more power when you and your neighbors are together and are making the same demands, right? And also you get to know your neighbors and take care of each other. Not all tenants in New York live in buildings that are organizable. Maybe they're in a basement apartment in a single family home. Maybe they're in a small building. And so what we're saying to those folks is sign our pledge, join the movement, to put pressure on Cuomo to cancel rent. And by doing that, you're participating in this collective response to not being able to pay rent, what we're calling mass noncompliance.
Susanna Blankley is coordinator of Right to Counsel of the New York City Coalition. And the world is facing one of the greatest economic disasters since the Great Depression of the 1930s. At least 30 million out of work in the United States alone because of the coronavirus pandemic. But workers are fighting back. Payday report lists what it says are at least 150 wildcat strikes during the pandemic. Some workplaces have experienced mass sick outs. In other places, bosses agreed to demands after a couple of hours. Workers from Walmart, FedEx, Target, Instacart, Amazon, and Amazon's Whole Foods Market went on strike today to protest unsafe working conditions amid the coronavirus pandemic. A leader in the strike wave is former Amazon worker Chris Smalls, who gained notoriety for informing fellow workers at a Staten Island Amazon warehouse of a dangerous coronavirus outbreak. Ironically, Smalls was accused of endangering workers he was trying to organize.
I'm protected for an entire month. Many of my former colleagues and coworkers contracted the virus, COVID-19. Some have even passed away. We just had a death 2 days ago in Oakland. There's been things that have been changed as far as safety, but they're not working. The cases in these buildings are growing by the day. We just got another text message today. They come in every other day or every day, and enough is enough. You know, these operations and these facilities are not safe at all, and there's breeding ground for the virus, so we want to shut down.
What happens when you, before this, it came to this, what happened when you approached the managers at Amazon and told them about your concerns?
They pretty much told me not to tell the employees. Not to tell the employees. We want to go to the individuals where they were last seen working. That wasn't good enough. Obviously, we don't know where the virus came from. We don't know how long this person had it. So I took my stance right there.
What happened when you took your stance?
I went home. I sent emails out to the CDC department, the health department, the government department. They didn't get any response. I had to go back to work. When I returned back, my colleague was sick. I sent her home. 2 hours later, we had another case in our building. That was March 24th. When I left that day, because I left after they told me not to tell my employees, I was so upset. I went home. I thought about what I could do, and that was to mobilize a walkout. Leading up to that, I came back to the building off the clock on my own free will. sat in the cafeteria for 8 hours a day telling their employees of how management didn't want to tell them that they possibly been exposed to have the virus. On 28th, when they quarantined me, that's when I knew they wanted to silence me. And I mobilized this walkout with ultimately resulted to my termination.
How did they quarantine you?
It was over the phone. They called me 2 hours after the protest on March 30th. They told me I violated some safety guidelines that didn't exist.
You were trying to warn people, and their response was to accuse you of endangering people.
Exactly. I got it right on the nail. Exactly what they did.
It came out that there was released some internal emails in which they talked about how they would deal with you.
Jeff tells us who Jeff is, who he is, who we have around him, the type of people they are, the type of conversation they have, how he thinks about his employees. He don't care about them. And even though they was talking about me, it's never going to be Amazon versus Chris Ball. It's going to be Amazon versus the people. They're going to answer to all of us. And today is a display of that.
How do you feel about today's events, and what are you going to take away from this?
Today is historical. I feel great. It's just the beginning. We formed an alliance that was unprecedented, but it's necessary. It's much needed right now, this moment on this pandemic. And this is just the beginning. We just want everybody to support us in solidarity.
Former Amazon worker Chris Small. Today's picket lines were predominantly virtual. Participating workers posted messages on social media, but a demonstration was held outside of an Amazon warehouse in Staten Island, and protesters gathered in Times Square. They wore masks and practiced social distancing. And across the United States, workers on the front lines have been warning they're being put in danger by bosses with little regard for their safety. Meat packers in the Midwest say news of coronavirus-infected coworkers were kept from them, and they were forced to work without PPE or adequate PPE. The $1,200 about to be paid out to laid-off workers seems a long time ago. Most of the bailout money, as usual, going to people who least need it. Economist Jack Rasmus says the future is bleak for workers unless they get together.
Well, what they got to look forward to is a continued very weak recovery of the economy under the best of conditions. Unfortunately, what we got is more and more bailouts for business going on. They increased the small business bailout by $320 billion. They're now talking about increasing the mid-sized business bailout and raising that for accessibility, that's called the Main Street program, for companies with 15,000 workers, so pretty big mid-size. They're going to get more money. We have the Fed throwing money at credit card companies, at auto leasing companies, all over the place. They're going to bail out the cities now, the cities and counties. You know, Pelosi's calling for $1 trillion. Everybody's getting bailed out more and more, except the workers. They can't get all the unemployment benefits they're filing for. On top of the 30 million now who are getting benefits, another 13.9 million haven't been able to get through to get benefits. So we got 40 plus million already out of work, some getting benefits, some not on May Day. And that's depression level unemployment. That's 25% unemployment. And it's going to go higher throughout this month. And unfortunately, while they keep bailing out businesses, what you see is what you're going to get for workers. In other words, they extended and increased the unemployment benefits through July. I predict they will never increase that further. The one-time $1,200 check, that's all you're going to get. We got trillions and trillions being thrown at businesses here, including those who don't really need it, large corporations who are fat on cash. $500 billion for the 165 million rest of us, that's all you're going to get. On top of that, Trump and businesses are forcing people to go back in very unhealthy situations and conditions, like Trump's order here recently forcing meat companies, packing companies, to stay open when we have a very high incidence of infection rates in those companies, forcing the workers on May Day to choose between their lives, infections, and getting ill, and their job. Because if they don't go back, they're going to lose their unemployment benefits. we got a real problem here of biased bailout, you might call it.
The governor of Iowa, actually, speech, they have them all over on C-SPAN, and as they come in, you can watch them, and she laid it out. Very strict rules. Don't think you can take a day off because you think you're in an unsafe condition. Only the employer can tell you if you are in an unsafe working situation, and that's the only time you can take off work, or you'll lose your unemployment, and you won't have a job when you come back.
The glove is coming off, the velvet glove's coming off, and now you see the fist. You really see what's behind the whole system. Screw the worker. You got small businesses and large businesses putting a lot of pressure on the White House and the governors to bring these people back to work. We're losing too much money, right? And the small business said, we're going out of business here. And, you know, my business, my revenue is far more important than anyone else's health. That's essentially what's going on. And those are the people in these right-wing led and promoted, encouraged demonstrations going on. And, of course, all the way up to the White House, Trump encourages that. It's all about forcing public opinion and forcing politicians to send everybody back to work early. It's a choice between their profits and your lives. So that's essentially what's going on. You're going to see more wildcat strikes. They're breaking out everywhere. The press isn't talking about it in the warehouse distribution and food processing where people are really getting ill. You're going to see more of that. Where's the union? The union should be behind its people more aggressively. You don't hear anything except, you know, statements about hypocrisy. Well, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to support your workers who are, many of them, at the risk of dying out there? There's nothing more important than the lives and the health of your membership.
On May Day, what should that fist be, just to wrap up?
Let's protect the working class, not talk nicely about it, you know, the heroes. Let's do something to protect the working class, especially those workers in these lead positions who are really exposed now. What are our demands to protect the working class on May Day?
And Dr. Jack Rasmus teaches economics at St. Mary's College in California. And that's some of the news for Friday, May 1st, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Have a happy and productive May Day.